really honoured to be on this radio station, Ollie, is that they don't just seek solutions, they offer real solutions to people who are struggling with banks, struggling with courts and judicial systems. And there's some real, real truth in realising our sovereignty and being able to be and stand in the power that we all have. And it's working greatly here in Ireland, and we're hoping spreading the word. And maybe, you know, we can be an example to the rest of the world at some stage, you know, do in Iceland if we can. There's only 5 million of us in this neck of the woods, with the extra few counties in the north of Ireland, which is still our island, but it's, as you said earlier, you know, it's occupied by British forces. Then we've got an island that can actually change things. Just saying no to the EU, starting to grow our own food and not take legislation and statutes that really we shouldn't even be complying to, and grow our own food, and we could be the breadbasket of Europe, supplying some of the most beautiful, beautiful foods, and because we have rain and green grass and just a wonderful climate to grow things in. Unfortunately, we're being subjected as subjects under the crown, if you like, to these ridiculous and stupid evil in my book, because it's damning for a nation to not have their own supply of things. I mean, it's how famines were created. I was recently talking to a good friend of mine, and he told me that in Ethiopia, the famine was actually created by, you know, the big UN agenda of going in and telling them that cotton was going to be their lifesaver, and that they should grow cotton all over the place, which they did. And they were treated okay at the beginning, and the different countries and the economic climate was nice and rosy because they were buying the cotton. And then one day they just went, nope, we get it cheaper elsewhere. End of chat. Start of a brand new famine. And that's really how Ethiopia came to be. And it is man-made shite that we need to sort out, and it really is, as you say, just a few at the top doing it. And once we expose those few at the top doing it, surely their millions of minions underneath them will suddenly cop on and wake up and start to work for the people instead of those elites. What do you think?
I totally agree, and I think it's very important to find out, and once again, study history, find out who the people in these power structures are, and you will find that it's the exact same people that started the UN that are behind the global elite. And it's the same people that started that organization for unity of the Europe and so on. Absolute bollocks, absolute bullshit. It is not true. It is there as an illusion for us, but what they're doing is just totally rape and plunder, and they do this thing country by country by country. You talked about Somalia, Ethiopia. They've done this again and again. What they on the agenda, the so-called New World Order, what they try to is they, before the world was like a disco ball with mirrors, all of them reflecting beautiful, all rainbow color beings, sovereign state that was self-sufficient, with all the different trades that a country needs, you know, so that they can withstand whatever. And then, like the UN and so on, or financial hitmen went in there, but the UN especially, with the help of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, went in there and said, listen, you know, you need to grow olive trees. Olive trees is the way to go. They went into Italy and Greece and these things, and go for olive trees, then forget about everything else, or in many different African states, grow coffee beans, or grow this, or grow that.
Yeah.
They get the whole thing going, so they give them all these loans and, you know, extra money to grow these crops. And then 3-4 years down the line, when everybody's doing the same in that country, they say, oh, I'm sorry, we'll buy it from Portugal instead.
Exactly.
Boom, just knocks the whole country, the financial situation, right out of the, you know, knock them out. And then in comes the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank said, oh, you're in a poor situation, you need a loan. Yes, okay, we can give you a loan, and you will never be able to repay it ever, ever.
Yeah.
And that's the way they do it. If they can't do it like that, they invade the country with military power, or they send in financial hitmen and so on. They've done it on a, what they want is this mirror ball to become like a crystal ball,
yeah.
One big, not a country, but a corporation. And they will just get rid of all the people they don't need in the country. They will just eliminate them. So I would say what is called the New World Order should be called the Fourth Reich.
Absolutely.
It's exactly the same agenda that Hitler was using, with the same finances behind him.
Well, with Operation Paperclip, all the scientists went to America, didn't they? And that's where it's all coming from.
Yeah, and this was done by the, you know, one of the people involved in Operation Paperclip was Alan Dulles, who was later one of the creators of the OSS that would then turn into the CIA, and very central in the JFK assassination, you know. And also Operation Paperclip was with a rat line through the Vatican State. You know, so it's the same power structure that comes again and again and again and again. And like you say, it's time for us to just say, we see it, you know. We can see what you're up to. It's not working anymore. It's like when you look at a magician and he's pulling off a trick, you know, and you think, oh my God, how did he do that? But once you see that he doesn't do it with his left hand that like you thought, but he's actually doing it with the right hand behind his back, as soon as you spot that, he won't be able to get away with it anymore. So the more people that see that it's actually going on behind the back in the dark, that's where it's all being pulled off.
So as stupid as people feel and feel they sound when they're telling people what they know as factual evidence and truth, they should just fire ahead and keep saying it and keep talking about it.
I would say that we've been duped on so many different areas in life, if not all of them. History, you name it, their belief systems, education. These people have been very active for decades trying to keep us in the dark by design.
Absolutely.
And so there's no shame of not having been aware of it. I mean, most people, all of us have been asleep at one point, but now is the time to wake up. It really is a very high time, because every single day that we are still asleep, innocent people get hurt in innocent countries, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we're talking about assassinations, and we're talking about, you know, Operation 40 and all the rest of it. But the biggest global, conspiracy, as you know, shining a light on conspiracies, is the fact that, you know, Kissinger was saying years ago, I think in the 50s and 60s, that he wanted to control the world's population food-wise. And that's actually what they've done with GM foods, poisoned foods, various ways with aspartame and God knows what else put into our children's foods, and the culling of the human race, the culling of the human species. They don't care if billions of us disappear. And I've got my own little theory on it. It's not necessarily true, Ollie. Do you want to hear it?
Go for it.
Well, I think that way, way back, sort of Roman, Greek times and all the rest of it, these elites, were aware, as you say, of frequencies, etc. They also were aware that if they kept the population down by lying that we were overpopulated, by lying that we needed to have wars and armies and all the rest of it, by lying, that they could keep the mass consciousness below 7 or 8 billion. I think it was below 9 billion was their safety valve. But then with the big paradigm, this is only my own view now, so it's hearsay from Shawnee, okay? But now that we have gone through a massive paradigm shift, we have gone through a massive consciousness shift, they now need to cull us even more. And that's what they're doing. They want to bring that mass consciousness, what that would have been around the 9 billion on the planet. They want to make sure that only 500 million of us exist, because now we are waking up. And this is the time that they have to either step up their game or get the fuck off our planet. There you go.
There I go.
It's only a theory. It's only a little theory of mine.
I'm not sure what to say, because I don't know the answer. I don't know how these people think. And I was on the Winnie Eastwood show, and I said one of the things I've had major problems with is understanding this greed. What is the, you know, why don't they ever get enough? How much power do you need? When is it ever enough? And how can you do this to a planet? How can you kill nature? How can you kill people like this? And he said, the only reason why you don't understand it is because you're not a pathological killer.
Exactly. You know, I mean,
pathological murderer. If you were, this would make total sense.
Ollie, for example, I mean, can you, for a second, understand what goes through the mind of a rapist to want to rape a woman or a child? I can't relate to it. There's no relation in my mind to it.
I tell you, I've been in war zones. I've seen people transform. I've seen people that I would never think would do horrendous things, do awful, awful things. So I don't want to say that I would not be capable of these things. I so hope I would not.
Yes.
But I cannot guarantee. If the situation changes, I have no idea. But as long as it doesn't change, the more important it is for me to build up my strength, my inner strength, so that in a difficult situation, I would not go that way. I would not make that choice, and so on. I tell you, I took a bicycle from Sweden, 1984 or something like that. I was an old bicycle. I was going south. I was aiming for South Africa. And instead I ended up in the middle of the war between Iran and Iraq. And when I came in there, I mean, I was all on my own. And at that time the borders were closed. The war was going on. It was awful, awful. And I was very afraid of the country because I thought, my God, they're absolute crazy. These people, you know, fanatic Muslims just running around shooting each other, screaming Allah Akbar, that type of thing. But what I found when I come in that was that it was an absolutely, I found the most beautiful people there, but in an extremely difficult situation, yeah. Extremely difficult situation. And the most generous, warm-hearted, but very also the worst of the worst were there, and the most beautiful of the most beautiful I found there, because they had come to a situation where the inner strength was showing, you know. The weak people they were the ones that got the uniform on. They were the ones who started torturing people. They were the ones harassing people. And the strong ones were the ones standing up for what was true and right and was being killed or put in jail or so on. But it was very, very interesting for me to see the different types of people, you know. When I came to roadblocks, our people were, you know, soldiers were pushing us around. And so when I look into the eyes of these people, I could see the same type of personality in my home country, you know, the guy that would take the easy way, you know, go for the money without compassion for his fellow human being, would go for the job without consideration for other people or the fancy car or whatever. He was the officer. You know, or he was the guy stopping cars, getting the rush of this power run. And I just thought it was really scary to see what side that people chose, you know. And I really felt, my God, in a situation like that, what side would I be on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at World War II and
yeah.
You know, the millions of people that decided to go the side of destruction and global domination, it's just scary, really.
Yeah. But in the world, in the big wars, I mean, they were so pumped with propaganda as well, that you do the right thing and God is on your side, and yeah. You know, they're evil, you know, we need to destroy these monsters. And then you start seeing, you go to countries where these monsters live, and they turn out to be beautiful people. That's why I think it's very, very important to travel. You know, go to these countries that you fear, and you will find out, my God, they're beautiful. They're absolutely, and be with them. Don't go and stay in hotels that are all, you know, isolated areas, or staying like in a soap bubble. Go and be with these people that you fear, and you will see that, oh my God, I'm totally wrong. We're all the same. Maybe you're black, maybe I'm white, maybe he's red, maybe I'm green. I don't know.
I often tell people, Ollie, that racism is just a pigment of your imagination.
It is. It is. And you know, when I was in Iran, they told me that I was green. I thought I was white, you know, even though I looked like brown. I don't know why they call it white if you're not English, but I mean, I'm sort of like brown. But they called, no, Europeans, they're green. So actually, once again, I thought I was white. Apparently, I'm green. You know, and black people are very often brown. Why are they called black when they're brown? It's sort of like a pigment illusion.
It is. It
just
is.
Like you say.
And it's just ridiculous. I mean, because, you know, deep down, 99.9% of us are good. We just want, and using your word, you know, which is our word, the universal word, everybody just wants to be loved and have the ability to love. And once that is in your life, it just changes everything. And when you go and meet these people in foreign lands and you see that they're exactly the same as us, just trying to get by and under the same indoctrination, education systems, economic barriers and all the rest of it, that again, when you look at it, are controlled by the few. Mm-hmm. And once we all wake up to that, that's when there will be a global and peaceful revolution. Carl A. Wilding in the chat room just says, can't see the police or army being enough to stop millions of people. I cannot see them shooting their own. It'll be a turning point where the elites cannot order their tools to do their bidding anymore.
Do you know in Iran during the revolution, it came to a point the Shah was in power and he was trying to westernize the country very, very fast. You know, he was the puppet of the CIA and so on. They overthrew a democratic politician or leader called Mossadegh. The CIA went in there, knocked him out, put the Shah on the throne, mm-hmm. and had him as their puppet sort of for years and years. Then came the big oil embargo, and suddenly Iran made billions, absolute billions, making him big-headed. So it came to a point where he had no longer the support of the CIA or the states, and they wanted him out, you know. So anyway, when he pushed forward his agenda too forcefully on the people, he was doing it with the help of a secret police called Salak. And people were being arrested in the thousands, tortured, executed, awful, awful stuff going on without the rest of the world knowing. But it came to a point, a tipping point where enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And that is where we are more or less now. We're getting to that point. And what happened then was that people just started coming out in the streets saying, I'm not taking anymore. It doesn't matter if you shoot me. I've had enough. And, you know, young, old, grandmother, children, everybody came out. So the Shah said, my God, kill them. So he sent out troops and tanks and helicopters, started shooting them in the hundreds. But what he didn't remember was that these are Muslims. They are, and with the traditions, every 15th day and every 40th day, they meet and celebrate the memory of the dead, at least every 40 day. So when that 40 day came in, all the people that had been killed, all their relatives and friends came out into the street. Mm. So the soldiers came out, shot some more. And then there was another 40 day thing that would repeat itself and repeat itself and repeat. So the more they killed, the more people came out and came out and came out. And in the end, this people, I tell you, the Iranian people, what they did, they threw out the fourth strongest army in the world without weapons.
Yes.
How did they do it? They did it by, you know, the soldiers, they tried everything, and the people went up there. Some were throwing rocks, but many of them came up with flowers, putting down the gun barrels, you know, just talking to them, saying, my God, look, my son, what have you turned into?
Yeah.
You're shooting at me. I'm your mother. I'm your grandmother. I'm your sister. You're killing your own people. And then soldiers just broke down in tears, you know, and were changed sides and were welcomed as heroes. And it's the same that's going to happen here. And this is what the elite fears. You know, really fear, because they're just a small, tiny little group of mostly elder men, and with a massive, big power in the form of military that can take them out at any time. You know, so yeah. They're very fearful of their own army.
Well, can I tell you a little story that again it's hearsay because Irish history has been struck out of most books. I was actually educated in England, Ollie. I grew up there. I was born there. My parents are both Irish, and you know I'm at school and I'm looking through the books, the history books, and I'm sticking my hand up in the air and getting caned every day for saying, "Why isn't there anything about Ireland in here?" And they go, "Well, we're learning British history." And I'm saying, "Well, for feck's sake, Irish history has been dominated by British history for the last how long?" You know, and none of it's in the books. That's really rude, isn't it? So I was expelled fairly soon. But the story I was told, and it goes back to Brehon times, when Ireland was full of the chieftains and the Taoiseachs around, there was one Taoiseach, but the chieftains around Ireland. Now, again, I don't know how much of this is true. I wasn't there, Ollie, okay? But basically, the British sent an army to Ireland to take over the land, to say, there's a little country, we'll have it. And they sent the army over, and it was obviously, you know, prehistory, apparently, according to our books. And we were living back then in Brehon sovereign times, okay? And apparently, they didn't know what happened after 4 or 5 years. Nobody had returned. So nobody had come back from the army, back to the kings in there were more than one king in England. So they had no idea what was going on. So apparently, this is where the first spies come from. But I'm sure someone will tell me there's a story that the first spies came elsewhere. But what they did is they sent another army over 5 or 6 years later to do the same. But they sent some bloodline family spies, if you like, as privates and as soldiers in the army to go over. And the only people that returned, now this is how the story goes, and I'm preambling and paraphrasing, the only people to return back to the kings of England were the spies. And they were actually sent back to tell the story of what actually happened. And allegedly what actually happened was that the Brehon Irish people of Eire welcomed the army with open arms and said, "You're free. You're not subject to anything or any arms or any soldiers. You're not doing anything for any king. You're here. Have land. Make yourself at home. Here's our family share. Let's party." And that's actually what happened, is that we lived allegedly a very, very peaceful spiritual world before the indoctrination of Christianity, basically.
That is the more or less exact history that I've read when it comes to Ireland. As far as I know, this is very close to the truth. But then again, when you look at history books, they're always written by the conqueror.
Yes.
Whoever won whatever battle, they're the ones writing the history books.
Indeed.
That is why if Hitler had won, you would have had very different history books in Europe.
We would indeed, absolutely. Having said that, he didn't lose, did he?
I don't get that one.
Okay, well, you know, they went to America. They're doing the same thing. They're still fascist dictators, and they're still wanting a global one world order.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. He didn't die in Berlin either. So
exactly.
True.
Yeah. So you know what I'm saying is that the war is still being fought. They just do it with economies. They do it with famines and in indoctrination with education, social structures, religion, and basically anything they can. And now global media seems to be, you know, if you're not a celebrity, you're not worth hearing, apparently.
Now, with media is one of the areas they really focus on controlling, you know.
Yeah.
Still, but now also that they weaponize the weather as well against us. So it's sort of like, it really needs to stop, you know.
It does. With fracking on the earth and chemtrails in the sky.
And HAARP and...
yeah, well, you know, HAARP linked to all of it. And now they have mobile HAARP programs on various warships around the world, you know, programming our weather and modifying our lands. And
listen to it. It's absolute madness.
Isn't it?
This is a mind that has gone absolutely mad.
Yeah, the lunatics have taken over the asylum big time, haven't they? Yeah.
And just for people who don't know it, you know the word government, you know what that means?
Mind control.
There you go. That is the exact translation of the word gobernante, mind control. Do you know, I saw this in the States in the 60s and so on, you know, in the good old days. They ended each evening with a national anthem on TV.
Okay.
And then they had the lyrics on screen. But when you slow it down, the lyrics, you know, the mind is so fast, you know, it can, whatever, that is why the commercials, they can just show an image of a Coca-Cola for a hundredth of a second and your mind still go, oh, I'm thirsty. You know, they can hide it like that.
Yeah.
But when the lyrics of this anthem came up, it was sort of like faded in letter by letter, over screen. And when you slow it down and really see what it says, it says before the real letter comes forward, there's another letter showing first. And there were all these sentences, do never object about the government. You are not allowed to protest. You are ours. We are here to control you. These type of words were there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how true it is, but I heard that Margaret Thatcher, during the Thatcherite years in England, she was taken to the European Court or the High Court of Europe for subliminal suggestion during the advertisements of the popular soap operas or Coronation Street, things like that in England.
That one, I've never heard about that.
Okay, must look into it. Maybe it was just hearsay.
Don't know.
But, you know, subliminal suggestion and now God, education, yeah. and the dumbing down of education now, Ollie. Yeah. I mean, our children not knowing half as much as the people that didn't even have a full education in the past.
Once again, done by design. And it's when you study groups like the Bilderberg Group, you will see that some of the key people they invite are also the Minister of Education, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very, very done by design. They do not want us to learn about our real power. They do not want us to know real knowledge, you know, thing that is really good for the world. They want us to just dumb us down with lots and lots of information that means absolutely nothing.
Absolutely.
And I tell you, when you ask people, so what in life, what have you really used from what you learned in school? Well, I can add numbers, I can subtract, I can, and percentage, that's about it, you know. But what did you learn? I learned thousands of things that I have no idea why I learned them, you know.
Yeah.
When it comes to mathematics and so on. We're just being pumped with all this absolute empty information, not helping anything.
And again,
it's the same with media now. It's just empty, empty, empty.
Yeah, Rick Fields in the chat room says, can we use geoengineering instead of chemtrails? Well, I tell you, Rick, I want to keep using the word chemtrails because every single time somebody says to me, ah, chemtrails, conspiracy theory, blah, 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 the very first people that used the word chemtrails weren't conspiracy theorists. They were the military. There's documentary evidence showing that they called them chemical chemtrails. That is where the word comes from.
The patents are done in that name. The patents are taken out as chemtrails.
Yep.
So that is not a word. And I just want to say also the word conspiracy theorist, it started right after the JFK assassination. When people started asking questions, they were labeled conspiracy theorists.
Yes.
I'm not interested in conspiracy theories. Yeah. I mean, everybody is allowed to have a theory. I can have theories, but it doesn't even really matter. You know, I'm interested in conspiracy facts, but we've been pumped for decades with this thing. So as soon as somebody says conspiracy, your mind will say theory. And as soon as the words two are combined, there's a doubt, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I just think I should. I'm going to keep calling it chemtrails because that is exactly what they were. Yeah, you know, because once people go chemtrails, you know, you're a conspiracy theorist. Well, okay, here's the documentary evidence that says where it comes from, etc., etc., etc. Okay, it ain't a label. It's not an invention. It's something that we were actually told exists, and they are using against us, even though they had legislation and statutes and agreements way, way, way back saying that they would never use weather modification against the human race.
I'm sorry you're in for a scare, because they are.
And oh, they
I
are,
totally
yeah.
agree with you, because geoengineering is such a wide area where chemtrails is just one part of it. So I think when we talk about chemtrails, the one you see in the sky,
let's
that's
be specific.
chemtrails.
Yeah.
Geoengineering is a much wider area where they do so many different weird things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they do. I mean, you know, was it an accident that the Icelandic volcano erupted just when they were going public with what they were doing to their politicians and government and banking people? I don't think so. The fact is, we can be brave and strong and carry on doing what we're doing, Ollie. It's really, really important that we get the truth out there. I just want to say, I want to apologize to anyone who's listening in and expecting to hear Max Egan, but you're in for a treat, because instead we have Ollie Damagard willing to stay on a little bit longer for us. So my apologies to anyone who's just tuned in and expecting Max Egan. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to contact him. It's early doors in Australia, and you know he's been on my show quite a few times and will be on again, of course. So Ollie, obviously we don't know what happened to Max. A conspiracy theory we could invent, but we won't. I'm hoping he just had a lovely lie-in on this gorgeous morning in Australia, probably, and hopefully they haven't got too many chemtrails over there.
I'm just sorry, I would prefer listening to Max Egan as well, so but
we're very honored and privileged to have you on this long, and I mean, just tell me when you want to go, and you're more than welcome to head. I know that 2 hours is a long interview anyway. 3 hours is pushing it a bit, isn't it, Ollie?
No, it's fine. Do you want to hear about that possible false flag massacre in Copenhagen?
I don't just want to hear it. I think all our listeners want to hear it too.
Okay. Because for me, that was a major thing. The thing was that I was... Your listeners know about the Bilderberg Group, don't they?
Yes, absolutely, they do.
Okay,
we have Peter Sutherland, who was our ex-attorney general, and if you know the name Peter Sutherland, he then went on. He's an Irishman. He then went on to work for Goldman Sachs, and then get a massive knee up as being one of the main protagonists in the Bilderberg Group.
Okay, so. What is very important to know also is that false flag operations is one of their tools to get away with their agenda. And this agenda is very often either to divert or to the thing we spoke about before, problem, reaction, solution, to secretly create a problem, to get a reaction from the public so that they can come with their solution. And they have been meeting since 1954 on a yearly basis on different locations, different countries, all of these things, very secluded often, so that it's easy to secure that nobody can have any by no way can enter the building where they meet or come anywhere close or anything like that. So normally there's a lot of armed police around, sometimes military helicopters, the whole shebang, you know, you see in Hollywood movies, that's the setup. And then the members that are normally about 140 that arrive to these meetings will come in black limos, Mercedes cars, tinted windows, these type of things, so that it's very difficult to see who's in them. And for many years, researchers have tried to expose who are part of this group to be able to see the agenda and find out what's going on. In my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion, the last 200 pages of this, have I said this already on your program? I'm sorry, this is the fourth interview today.
It's the fourth interview today. God, you're still going. It must be the energy you're creating, Ollie.
Thank you. No, but the last 200 pages in my book, Coup d'etat in slow motion, are just, it's 1100 pages almost, this book, but it's membership list from the Bilderberg meeting from 54 all the way to 2014.
Brilliant.
All the members, all the agenda, all the places, locations they met and so on. And when you study this agenda from the different years, and then you study world history, what happened the following year, you will see there are extreme parallels of whatever was discussed in the meetings and then what happened in the world. And I tell you, wars were decided and created in these, at these meetings. People were decided to be taken out or chosen in as prime ministers, assassinations, financial devastating of countries and things like this, continents. The decisions were taken in this group, among other. And so that is why I focused a lot of energy during the years to expose as much as I can when it comes to this Bilderberg group. So anyway, they've been trying to deny that this group has existed for many, many years. And last year was the first year when they couldn't hide it anymore.
Yeah.
And so instead, they chose to go totally open with it and invite the Truth Movement instead. So the meeting was being held in Watford, England, just outside London. And the whole Truth Movement that came there were sort of guided in by armed police and searched and all of these things into a fenced-in area about half a mile from the actual hotel. So you could see the hotel down the end of this whole area, but nowhere, you were nowhere near. Anyway, so... But what happened just before the meeting, when the international media for the first time was really getting their eyes open to the fact that this group actually exists, and more journalists were thinking, my God, we need to go there, we need to see what's going on, then, boom, the so-called beheading in Woolwich. Do you remember the two North African? Yeah. An absolute staged event.
That was just so weird. I mean, you're going to explain that one to us, are you, Ali?
I tell you, normally I do a 2-hour interview just on that one, because when you start getting into the details, I'll be very happy to come back on your show and we can just focus on that one.
Yes,
because that is my absolute favorite. Okay. It is so sloppy, so badly done, such a low budget, no preparation, awful. And we bought it, or many people bought it. But the whole thing, what happened was that the attention of the international media was look right away from the Bilderberg meeting towards this atrocity that was blamed on a poor innocent minority. Blame the Muslims, blame the Muslims, blame the Muslims.
Yes.
And nobody noticed the meeting. Everybody forgot about the Bilderberg meeting and everybody was totally focused on, let's get the Muslims out of here.
Yeah, so pretty crazy stuff.
No, it's standard.
Yeah.
It's the templates they use, okay? It's getting too close, get the attention, blow something up, make them look that away. You know, it's standard procedure. So this year, since I've studied these things for about 30 years, so I have some experience in the way they think and the way they set things up and so on. So when I came to, I flew in from Spain, I was invited as one of the key speakers, not at the actual meeting, but outside the building.
Sure.
So I was expecting the normal kind of shebang, you know, the police, armed police, total control, army somewhere, maybe NATO vessels, these type of thing, bomb sniffing dogs, at least some kind of security thing there. I arrived on the Wednesday evening. The first ones were supposed to arrive Thursday morning. I came there Wednesday evening. So I came to the airport in Copenhagen, and one of the things that I found really strange was that I just walked right through the passport control. There was no one there. And this is not normal when it comes to these meetings, because then security goes a bit tight, you know, because they want to be sure.
Weren't there, Ollie. Maybe that was the right hand while they were off elsewhere in a different country doing the left hand thing.
Wait a bit, Sean.
No, okay.
Finished yet.
Sorry.
So I was picked up at the airport and I said, maybe if you wouldn't mind, can you just drive me to the hotel so I can see the whole setup, the streets going in, out, you know, how they controlled it, all of these things, just to a checkup. So I went there. I was prepared for the normal routine, you know, like police, maybe some militaries, maybe some snipers on the ceilings, a helicopter here and there, some kind of security thing. I came to the area, absolute nothing. There was nothing. And this hotel it doesn't follow the template, the normal routine. And like they normally meet at these secluded super luxury hotels. This is in central Copenhagen, right in the middle of town, only like 500 meters from the main train station. And it's located, the whole building is made of with glass, you know, so you can see in through from the sides and from the front. You can see people in the corridors and the stairs and so on. Very, very strange when it comes to their type of meeting, when they want to hide where they are and who they are and so on. And also it's right on the brink of a water canal, a wide canal. And so that on that side, on the back of the hotel, it is